now. Everyone's all quiet, but the second Phil got on, we were just like giggle shits, just talking to each other.
But I feel like that just, it's a conversation stopper, though. So that happened, and we're all like, yeah.
So that
did.
Happened. Well, I guess that means we're recording the podcast now.
I guess yes. It does mean that.
The
yes,
podcast.
Magically.
The podcast. Yeah, in my notes, I literally just wrote Podrick in caps for partially part of it.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
It's just such a pointless scene, but we'll get there.
I don't know that I would call it pointless.
Well, there were some points, but...
Yes,
I would. I would give Podrick some points.
I think he... There were points involved.
It appears that this episode has made Podrick the only one who has remained one of the unsullied. This is Game of Owns. We're a podcast presented by Winter is Coming. Phil's here.
Hello.
Phil is here.
Winter Phil.
It's cold as ice us. When Winter Phil joins us, man. I put on a parka for you, just for you.
Nice.
It looks good.
Fur line.
Oh, yes, with the finest lamb skin and the finest goat skin. And I took the horn and turned it to a drinking cup. Eric, you were just saying something about a scene.
The scene that immediately caught all of these guys' eye.
Theon!
Yeah, well, no. That too.
Theon's arrived.
Well, obviously, we just watched the latest episode, episode 3, and it's immediately after recording time. We're all looking at our Twitter feeds. I'm sure Winter is Coming's blowing up, man.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of reactions.
We're getting a ton of owns.
Well, somebody got owned.
This episode was full of owns, and I feel like every episode we have a great amount, but this one just seemed, I don't know, it seemed faster paced. It seemed to deal with characters in a more upbeat kind of way. I don't know.
You know what's funny about the pace, though, is that for the first like 5 or 10 minutes, I thought that my audio wasn't working because it was so silent. Like everything, the first 3 scenes or so, there was no background noise. Like really, there was like a bit of music and that was it. And then there were like, you know, the scraping chairs and the long sort of sighs as the air, like what's his face? Edmer failed with the arrows. And it was just, it was great.
Yeah, there wasn't much dialogue in the beginning.
Earlier tonight, Selena and I channeled the gods in order to make this viewing party possible. Now Game of Owns is being created as we speak.
It was so fun.
it was a good time.
It was a good experience, especially at the very end, because we all got to go.
I could hear her gasps from Sweden.
Yeah, yes, without microphones.
So this is what we saw coming, or this is what most of you other guys, other than myself, knew was coming. And all of the comments and fun and jubilation from you guys and the listeners have now come to a roaring, like, stop. Here it is. So just let it out. Talk about it all you want.
It was so weird, though, because even though we saw it coming, the hand moment that we've been waiting for so long, you know, me and Mike have all been joking about it, la, 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 handy, blah, 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 all fun. Then it happened. And it was just like, it was terrible and it was shocking because of the way that they did it. That moment when they cut it off and before he realized, when he just looked down at the hand and then he started screaming, and I can't even,
and
it's
then,
my Jamie.
And then there was punk rock.
Yeah.
Irish punk. This has to be one of the coolest ways like that they've rolled the credits, I think.
I liked it.
That was really cool.
I liked it.
Yeah, that was great.
Well, at first I thought it was kind of jarring at first, but you know, I've had a chance to rewatch the episode a couple of times and it's really grown on me. It just seems like a perfect way to end it after that happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's like their way to be like, hey, we know this episode was the shit. The show's real good. Like, yeah, enjoy. We remixed a song. Like, it's cool. They're pushing forward.
Yeah.
You know, I opened my Shazam app because I was like, what the hell is this song that they're playing? But then I realized
Shazamming.
I'm Shazam the credits because I wanted to know. But it actually, then I listened to the lyrics and I'm like, oh, this is the same song as earlier, The Bear and the Maiden Fair, which obviously doesn't exist in the real world, or maybe tonight it does. But so it's an Irish
you
jig
all
version.
Everybody.
Of, yeah, you all,
yeah.
Everybody. You all, everybody. You all. Anyway.
Now Jamie's like looking for his guitar that's lost and now he can't play.
It's like, I was in Dry Shaft.
He's going to have to learn left-handed guitar now.
Like, I know
that.
Who you are. I loved your
song.
You
can songs. Do it. You can do it.
This was a great episode, though. It had lots of flow, you know?
It did. There was
hustle
a lot of
and
confidence
flow.
In the way they told the story tonight.
It was exciting. It was absolutely exciting. I mean, we, like I said, we watched in kind of a weird way. But it was one of those episodes where we were, I kind of felt like we were in the same room watching it. So we're sitting there texting during the whole thing, like, oh, can you believe that happened? And I'm just going to read you Selena's last text.
Oh, no.
And this is literally, okay, her last three. Oh, no, with six O's. I can't handle it in caps. And her last text was, I can't handle it.
Thanks. You got it.
And oh, my God, seven times. OMG in a row.
Thanks for counting those.
So clearly something happened here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's also because we just had a chance to see how amazing he was when he rescued Brienne. I mean, that was the ultimate knight in shining armor. Yeah,
amazing is taking a little far. Sister.
No, no, no. Hey,
Eric's
hold
not
on.
Impressed.
Wait, that's just so weird. Yeah, okay, whatever. He sleeps with his sister. Get over it. That was
last
season.
He threw a kid out of a window.
Yeah, whatever. Two seasons ago. He's redeeming himself, okay? And this is just fantastic. And you could just see the way he was so nice. And he was like, I can't let Brienne suffer this fate. I'm going to save her. And then they were all like, oh, come over here at this table. And then boom. Hand.
You know, they did that pretty quick. I'm just saying, like, it could have been a lot worse. All of a sudden, you don't have a hand. Sure, that sucks. As any dismemberment.
What?
Would, but
have you ever tried losing a hand?
He didn't have a screw in his hand for a week and a half, you know, tied to a cross. So, whatever.
Yeah, but that's Theon. I mean, come on.
How is he somehow different?
Cat
I don't
fight,
know.
Everybody.
He's just not as, like, I don't know, appealing to me.
The difference between Jaime and Theon is that Jaime doesn't have this badass archer watching his back, killing everybody who's chasing after him unfairly on horseback.
The difference is that Jaime has swagger and Theon is just slimy.
There he is, fellas. Listening.
What do the rest of you guys have to say?
We had a review on iTunes recently that said they had a platonic crush on you, Selena.
Mm.
True story.
That's wonderful.
We'll read it toward the end of the episode, so a little bit of friendship here. But fellas that are listening, you just got to be gallant, not slimy. That's the key to her heart right there, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much.
What does everybody else think?
Don't everyone talk at once.
Yeah, riveting.
Let's compare the horrors that Theon faced with the horrors that Jaime faced today.
Neither of these characters have been faced with horrors. Let's be honest.
Hey!
Here. Horrors... Horrors.
Horrors. They've both horrors. Been. Okay, let's be fair. Theon, I mean, I'm not a fan, but poor guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's been tortured. But horrors?
That's
let's
a horror.
Let's talk about horrors. Let's talk about Hot Pie.
What do you qualify?
Arya and Gendry sitting in a pit of people in a mud cage, mm-hmm. and they're coming by and picking who's going to get tortured and killed that day. You know what I'm
That's
saying?
True.
Like putting a rat in their stomach. There's been crazier stuff in this show.
And even more so in this episode, I mean... Arya got a bread and Gendry didn't. That's got to be pretty rough.
Yeah, a nice piece of bread. And let's talk about horrors, Craster's Keep, him taking out babies and giving them to the blue people. You know what
oh
I'm saying?
Oh my God, dude. Yeah, so
there
somebody's
some
pregnant.
In the show and someone got his hand cut off. And it was a very big deal because he's attractive and he's great with a sword and it was a sword hand. And if it did mess with the audio, I'd slam my fist down on this table, one that I still have.
Is there something you're not telling us, Z?
What I'm trying to tell you guys is that this was an emotional episode, so this is going to be an emotional episode, okay? Damn it.
Yes.
Tempers are running high.
No, it's, well.
Do you think he was a bit naive, though? You know, did you really think that he could play these guys the way that he was playing them and just expect that nothing was going to happen, that he could just, after being tied up to a tree, walk over to a table, sit down, have something to eat, kick it with the guys like nothing was wrong?
Well, it worked for him and Brienne. That's the thing. They gave him like false security by allowing him to bribe them about Brienne or appeal to their business interests, you know, their financial thing. And so he thought he was on a roll, you know, and he clearly was not.
And he shares that, you know, the arrogance with Tyrion, where he thinks that he's a Lannister, he has money that makes him invincible.
Yeah, and the guy says the same, you know, guy says pretty much the same to him. You know, you think fortune will get you all the way. All you need to say is my father.
But that's important because of the relationship that really I don't think exists with Bruce Bolton and the Bastard. And so I think that might play into it a little bit. I mean, maybe I could be wrong about that, but I think that that's kind of a side storyline that you may factor into when Jaime talks about, oh, my father can do this, my father can do that. It kind of rubs him the wrong way.
He did seem a little extra pissed off about it, you know?
But, I mean, could I, in the split second that event occurred with Jamie at the end of this episode, I couldn't help but see the silver lining. And I'm not talking about of his wound. But in general, this brings Tyrion and Jamie.
He's not a unicorn. There's no...
This brings Tyrion and Jamie one step closer together. This is going to bring Tyrion and Jamie one step closer to each other because they're both, in a way, maimed.
I think there's a point, though, with the whole cripples and bastards and whatever the hell the rest of that quote was. You know what I mean? Like, there's something to be... Broken things. I think there's a point to this knight in, you know, shining golden knight now being a broken thing, you know, if he ever makes it back to his father.
I don't think it's safe to assume that George wrote Jamie and having his hand cut off to make him, like, him and Tyrion be closer together, though.
No.
Like
no, well, it's not safe to
I don't think they'll make him Hand of the King either.
Right. Right. Well, what I mean to say is, like, this is a... Jamie was set up as a character that was so strong and so powerful, and is. And even with the things that he's done, he did it for love, and in that, there's a redeeming trait, and is why he remains such a favorite audience character.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing something like this happen to him, it's strange because he's still so important, even though he's done so many bad things. That, I mean, it was a cliffhanger at the end of this episode, and we feel bad for him, even though he's a prisoner for our side, you know?
I think the other thing that it teaches you, and it's something I'm sure that we've already learned because of Ned back in season one, but nobody is safe and nobody is, you know, allowed to, or not allowed, but you get what I'm saying. I mean, nobody can just walk through a season and think that nothing is going to happen to them. They're all subject to Martin's torture.
Pretty much.
Or Martin's justice. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair statement. Just when Jamie got comfortable and let his guard down, let him think he was winning, he clearly was not.
But speaking of people that aren't winning at all, let's go back to Theon for a moment, since we were just talking about him before. And I won't say any more going down.
He's
that
winning.
Route.
He got out of jail. That was crazy.
You know what? It's funny because yes, it's true. He did get out of jail, and just when the attackers were catching up to him, his little Frodo Baggins lookalike Link came, you know, running out of the forest in his green cape and rescued him. And I don't know, Phil and Micah, did you guys see this coming?
No. Well, sort of. I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but I'm interested in seeing where they're going with this. Let's just put it that way. And Frodo Baggins is pretty badass with a bow.
Yes, that too.
Yes, he is.
The executioner style arrow to the face was pretty crazy.
That reminded me of Aemon Hen, where like Lurtz is like going over Boromir and he's going to give him the last shot in the face. Yeah.
The guy did use words of the north when he said winter is coming.
I was just going to say that. Mm. It makes you question, you know, who he's actually working for, because surely if that's everything, I don't think that's just me speculating now, but surely if he was of the Ironborn persuasion, you would have expected him to say something more Ironborny, like what are their words? Like blood.
What is dead may never die.
Yeah, exactly. What is dead may never die.
Right. Something like that. Yeah. You know, like winter's coming seemed very out of place. But I mean, I think, you know, it's safe to say that this is somewhat a deviation from the book series. I don't think that's spoiling anything right now. So, I mean, I know I'm personally like, ooh, what the hell? I wasn't expecting that. But in the best way, you know, because I have no idea what's going to happen now.
It almost seemed kind of Jojen-ish. Just the way he appeared, and he just seemed really magical, for just more magical than he needed to be, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's like it remains really mysterious for me.
Yeah, I agree. I thought of Jojen as well right away, and I think that's due to the last episode, the way he appeared in the forest.
Unless he's totally playing him,
right?
Well, I consider that a possibility, but wouldn't that really suck if he was just in it to injure Theon some more?
Yeah, but wouldn't that just be?
Eric
to have his retribution. All of Theon's enemies are killed right now. Celebrate, man. That's a good night for you.
All right, awesome. Get go Theon. This is your time.
Drinking out of a horn. No, I'm really pleased with how that plot line turned out right now.
Yeah. I figured I was watching and I was thinking Eric peed a little. Just Theon just got out of jail. No, that was good for him. I mean, if you're a Theon fan and you're listening, props. Go crack a bottle of bubbly tonight. It's your night.
Are there any listening?
Crickets.
I'm sure there are.
Crickets.
I'm sure there are. Well, okay, I have to talk about something at the beginning of the episode, because it's something that we've talked about before a handful of times, and that's, and Eric, you've actually insulted Braun's skill. You said that his shot wasn't that good, and I think everybody here would agree with me that Braun Favre stepped up at the Battle of Blackwater, and he got the target right on the first try. Unlike the guy this, I want to say this, I almost said this morning, unlike the guy this morning on the show, because he's outside and, you know, the beginning of the day, and he shot at the boat, and he missed like 8 times.
He was there pretty much until this evening, still missing.
Yeah.
That's
right.
What you're saying.
He would be there now if it wasn't for his uncle.
I know.
Stepped in his
poor Edmure.
He was so pissed. He's like, get out of my way, asshole. And he just steps up and he shoots it. But I just thought it was great because from the ending that we had last week, going right to this, you know, there's a fight and then now it's so chill and it's almost comedic. It was really, they're doing a good job. I mean, it was cool. It was very almost Mad Men-esque the way it made me feel, how it just kind of warps you around in emotions and moods, and it was comedy this time.
I love the Blackfish. I mean, I loved him in the book, but the actor is great too.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah. They mentioned that in the dialogue too. They're like, you know, most of the world, even in the worst days of war, most of the world is nothing's happening.
Right.
So I thought that was a reference to, well, obviously I just found it connected with the show because it was such a light episode. Well, I don't want to say such a light episode. There was still a lot that happened, but
like, you know, I mean, you're right. But I mean, we're talking about this joke that was happening. It happened at a funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
following a funeral.
Well, I mean, he was shooting at the thing. It's like, you know, still going until the arrow hits.
They were so upset with him too. The way Kat looked, she was livid, man. And it's like, why not? Because this is an honor thing. You have to get somebody who's decent with arrows to. Otherwise, you just light it on fire when it's like there. You don't let it go halfway down the river and have a guy who can't shoot to tasked with, you know, shooting a flaming arrow.
I always felt like that must be a lot of pressure, though. I mean, yeah. Like, if you miss, it's like shame upon your house.
30
he
long.
Missed four times.
Yeah.
And he shot
very
four arrows.
Realistic, though.
I bet you that they didn't even write it in, and that he just missed trying to get the shot. And they're and like the guy getting mad. This was all off script. They're like, let's just keep it. This is great.
I'm not sure because it did set up Edmure versus the Blackfish really, really well. I mean, just
wasn't.
In that first shot. Yeah, yeah, I know. But you know, like it was just the shot in itself. That first scene. You had the difference between the two characters right there. You didn't know who they were necessarily, but you were like, okay, so this guy is a fail and this guy is awesome. Yep.
I like how
yeah, I guess.
After the Blackfish shot it, he didn't even wait to see if it hit the boat. He just started walking away. He just knew.
It was badass. There's no question.
This gave me hope for the other elder characters, such as, you know, Whitebeard or whoever it is with Danny. Later on.
Barristan?
Yeah, Barristan Selmy.
That's
isn't
good.
He in? No, in the books, he's Whitebeard for a long time.
Yes.
He's a
white pirate.
From what I hear. But anyway, Sir Barristan.
from your read aheads. Yeah. I wanted to ask the question about the Tullys. You know, what did you guys feel about them being introduced in this particular episode? You know, were you overwhelmed, underwhelmed, indifferent? Do you feel like it was a bit rushed, a bit confusing?
I like the introduction. I do wonder if, you know, newer viewers are kind of like, you know, now who are these people again and where are they? Because they didn't really, you know, kind of establish where they were in the beginning or even who they were. Like Selena said, there was like almost no dialogue right in the beginning of the episode there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just transitioned right away into a scene where they're talking like battle tactics, and I mean, you kind of get a sense of what's going on, but they do drop you right into it. But overall, I really like their introduction.
Yeah, me too. But it's mainly because I just loved the Brendan. What is the name of the actor? Do you remember?
Clive Russell.
Clive Russell. Yeah, exactly. Like I've seen him in other things, and it's just he almost struck me as like a new Ned type character. Like I just saw him, and I was like, I trust you. Lead me through this series.
I felt the same way. I immediately liked him, and I thought the setup with Kat was for me. He just became a character in the show. He was well spoken. You know, when he said the bit about people have been calling me Blackfish for 30 years or something like that, I was just like, okay, so. Just that line there is sort of unofficially saying, all right, he's one of the good guys. He's been doing it for a while, so we can trust him.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, when Rob is tearing into the other guy,
yeah,
that was awesome.
He's grilling him.
Yeah, no, he stepped up and he's like, I'm King Rob. It sounds really cool. It's a cool name. I know. Let's talk
almost
about
like
war.
King Robert. So, you know.
Yeah.
He kept asking him, what value is the mill? that was, you know, recovered, and then explains to him, these 208 men that died, we need them. We need our men more than Tywin Lannister needs his. And that sold it. You know, the guy's like, the guy, you know, his only response, I'm sorry. Although it should have been, I'm sorry, my king, or I'm sorry, my lord. But I guess somehow the Night Eaters aren't observed.
They're family.
But I saw for the first time, I guess, that Rob really cared. And Rob had a plan that just wasn't necessarily revealed to this guy, and his eagerness, you know, cost a lot of lives and changed an opportunity that Rob would have had.
But, you know, it's also, there's also something else. And, like, you guys know that I'm not necessarily the biggest Rob fan. Like, I like Rob, but because he hasn't had a point of view chapter in the books, I feel like I don't get to know him as well as I get to know the other characters, because you always see him from other people's point of view. So I think in this scene, I more got the fact that he's getting really, I don't want to say cocky, but he's stepping up the game, which is great, but he's also beginning to take a lot of these things for granted. He's beginning to take for granted that he has got it right. And I think, you know, one of the things Kat was trying to teach him was it's really important to show confidence, but it's also important to listen to others, you know? And it's interesting to see him change going forward.
I thought that Richard Madden really showed the difference in Rob, like exactly what you're saying, a little bit more arrogant and a little bit more cocky about what he was doing. But as far as acting is concerned, I thought this is one of Rob's best scenes for me, dialogue-wise. Mm-hmm. It was just excellently done, completely believable, puts you right in the moment, as the show should, considering its size and, you know, response by the media. But it was good acting, and I think that was pretty safe to say throughout the entire show tonight, especially the small council.
Yeah,
everything is just flawless. Like, that they're doing the an excellent job. You know, like, how do you follow up last season, you know? Mm-hmm. But they're doing it great. This is the third episode, and again, for me, it's a winner. And it could very easily not be, you know.
See, it's weird for me, because I feel like Rob's storyline is struggling. I don't find it as interesting, even though it was a great moment between the Tullys and him in that particular scene at River Run. But overall, I feel like it's very disjointed. You know, he's going from Harrenhal to River Run, and you don't really know
what his plan is.
Exactly. You don't know what his purpose is. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's what they're trying to tell as a story. But when you're reading it, it's all coming mostly from Catelyn's perspective, so it's a bit different. And I think they're trying to do it from Rob's, but I think maybe now on screen we're seeing why the story didn't necessarily come from his perspective, you know, up until this point, because it's hard to tell. It's not working very well, at least for me.
Yeah.
This episode, I was pleased with Rob, and I was surprised that they even gave his wife a whole scene, you know, unto herself.
I like her, though.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
Yeah. I mean, when she's intimidating the Lannister young boys, and she says, my husband doesn't eat children unless it's the full moon.
That was funny.
It isn't a full moon tonight, is it? It's like, yeah, but she's totally sticking up for Rob. She's like, yeah, he can turn into a wolf. Yeah, that's cool. So she's just kind of fueling their fear of him, which is good, because, you know, if they do escape, they'll carry those rumors on.
I think she was always just I saw that differently, actually. I saw it as her trying to appease them and make them more comfortable, even though they were Lannister children.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I think she was being kind of nursely to these little kids,
like,
you know,
playing
taking
around
care
with
of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, telling them a story.
Well, let's get back to the small council, because that should be hilarious.
Let's scrape some chairs and talk about
that
it.
It was pretty badass, I have to say. Another one of those just like injections, like the beginning of the episode, where it's just like silent, awkward humor that I'm not used to seeing in such a serious show. Good job.
Yeah. This is a sign that you have good actors, is you give them like no dialogue. You're like, you have to make this scene work, you know, on screen. And it's what Baelish and Varys and the old man are just standing there looking at Tywin, who's at the other end of the table in the room. He hasn't sat down yet. So they're just like, what? Are we staying here? What are we doing? You know, and he finally sits down and they're just like, okay, we're going to find and make our seats. Obviously, then Cersei comes in, you know, grabs her seat, pulls, you know, lifts it elegantly around to the other table, sits next to Tywin, leaving Tyrion there to just, what's he going to do? And what I noted in my notes here is that his chair, which was at the end of the table, he actually moved it to the direct end, like the actual end of the table. So he's now completely opposite Tywin. I thought this was symbolic or figurative, but whereas before he wasn't sitting exactly across from him, he's now at exactly the other end of the table from his father. And I thought
that was just to own his sister, though, wasn't it? Because she first scraped. She was like, I'm going to sit at my father's right hand. And then Tyrion was like, screw that. I'm going to do you one better.
Well, let's not forget, he's not sitting next to Grandmeister Pycelle after he threw him down in the dungeons, so to speak, last year or last season. Last year.
It's like last school year.
Yeah, when they were freshmen in high school.
Right. Summer break's been hard on all of us.
Well, just the whole week seemed like it was going so slow this week. I don't know. Hopefully next week coming up goes quicker because I want to see more.
So is this the last? No, you have one more episode.
I do. I haven't watched it yet, though.
You should watch it.
I'll probably watch it.
You should watch it, yes.
Do it right now.
Right now?
While we're here.
Actually,
put it on. We'll hear your commentary.
Fire it on,
Holy shit. No. Yeah,
his hand is actually gone.
Wait, it's growing back.
It's the Addams family are casting it. What?
He's regenerating.
Do you think that some magic could bring... I don't even know if I should ask because it doesn't make... There's no point in arguing. Theory.
His hand is not beyond the wall, so it's not going to come back to life.
No.
Yeah, he's going to grow a silver one, though.
He could.
So it's fine. He'll kill werewolves with it.
the silver hand.
Uh-huh.
Now, was this our first time seeing Varys?
I think
season?
So, because I wrote a text to Zach going, Varys! Or maybe
did you see how pleased he looked when Tyrion was like cracking jokes in the small council?
Yeah. He likes he's Tyrion.
Like sharing a laugh with him. That was good. It's good to have you back.
They're bros
you
in a way.
Weird bald thing. Yeah.
They all kind of dumped on him with the position though of being the master of coin. They were all just like, "Yeah, Tyrion could do that, sure."
The whole thing was so awkward, you know, because it was great because Varys is like, oh, yeah, this is a meeting. We're having a meeting. This is a good meeting. Speaking of, I hear that you're not the Lord of Harrenhal anymore. And Baelish just fighting back all of the urge he had. He'd be like, well, I hear that you still have no testicles. He didn't say it. But eventually, we now know that Baelish he's going to get married. So congratulations for Baelish. Good for you. You didn't quite get the one you wanted, but you got her sister.
Close enough.
He's like, yeah, she likes me. It's cool. And everybody just kind of shares a look at each other like, this guy's a prick.
Am I the only one who doesn't think this is going to work out? Liza Aaron is crazy. She's absolutely crazy. She's unmarriable.
Well, yeah.
She's a bit.
You think he cares?
No. But who would possibly promise someone, knowing what condition Liza Aaron is in, who would actually, I realize it's like a strategic alliance, but I really need to see this on screen to believe it because I don't think.
Well, he wants the Eyrie.
Yeah, who doesn't? It's awesome.
It is pretty awesome.
And who knows? Maybe Moondor. He does love her.
Impenetrable.
I'm sure that Tywin is sitting there thinking, will Peter be happy? Will he be happy with who I'm setting him up with?
I'm just saying, man, that's not going to work at all. I don't think he'll be happy.
We'll circle back to episode one, though. Remember what he said to Sansa.
What did he say to Sansa? What did
he say?
I might have a way out of here soon.
Ooh.
Connecting the dots. I'm just connecting the dots, people.
Yeah, we're all intrigued.
Mike is our resident doctor.
But how awesome was that later on in the episode when Tyrion says to Baelish, enjoy the Eyrie?
Yeah.
It was such a cool tie back to season one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was very good. Mord!
Maybe we'll see Mord again.
Ooh,
that
I
would
hope
be
so.
Pretty badass. No, what was I going to say? I forget the exact quote. I feel like we're already doing owns because right now at this point we're just trading badassery. But there was a part in the episode where Baelish is giving him counsel and Tyrion's like, well, I'd be a rich dude if I knew all that shit. And he's like, or I'd be richer than you if I knew all of these answers. And he was like, well, you are richer than me. He's like, oh, yeah. And he just walks away. No, that's good. The whole thing with Tyrion and Baelish, it's like we're getting some old school, and I hate to say old school because I don't want to act like the show's that old, but we're getting some season one ownage, some season one back talk. It's getting good.
Yeah. A lot of things are connecting.
Yeah. Even the scene, you guys talked about it a little bit before with Arya when she gets the bread from Hot Pie.
Direwolf bread.
She goes up to the Hound and she says, do you remember the last time you were here?
She was pissed.
She was. She was talking about me, man.
She was thinking of you, man.
Got chopped in half.
Do you think he's going to get Well, yeah, he was cleaved, man.
Yeah.
Oh, we just did the book. If you guys are listening that were with us during the book description, if you guys weren't, I'm going to go ahead and give you the book breakdown of what happened with the Hound the last time he was there. He rode down a kid who did nothing and chopped him from his shoulder to his belt on the opposite side.
Ouch.
Yeah. I know.
Poor guy.
So there's that.
I wonder how many like show-only viewers even made that connection.
Remember
though.
That? I didn't make that connection. I didn't remember. I didn't notice where they were.
Yeah.
Where else would they be? It's always there. It's always there. You know what I mean?
Well, like his response is, lead there. You know, I see a lot of shitty places. It's like, no, I didn't make that connection either.
Yeah. It was very subtle.
It's because we're the nerds sitting back here watching all the cool people do stuff. Yeah.
But the thing I like about it is that for people that are only watching the show, they could go back and watch the first season. And then when they make that connection, it's like, wow, they had that, you know, in, you know, three seasons or two seasons later in season three. Same thing with Thoros being introduced last episode, and they mentioned him back in season one. And it's cool how they, like, added those little, you know, little tidbits along the way so that people, when they go back and rewatch it, can pick up on that.
So the show is recreating tiebacks for us. It's almost as compartmentalized as a book series would be, because like you said, we're getting season one connecting with season three. And for me, I felt like the way they shot this out in the trees, it almost felt a lot like those scenes in the beginning of season one. And we just did those with commentary episodes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, if I were to watch this episode again when the entire bit with Arya and the Hound is happening, I would see that, because they possibly shot in the same spot. That's kind of unlikely unless it was easily accessible and cheap. But that's really interesting. A tie back with Thoros and those guys. Space Champion actually wrote on a Winter's Coming post. He reminded us that not only did Thoros win the melee in the King in the Hands tournament. So the badass archer guy that the Hound was talking shit to in this episode, saying, yeah, you're good with your bow, but I like to see people when I kill them. And then he makes the reference that maybe he likes to kiss them, and guy won the archery competition.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So these dudes are badasses.
And it all connects.
Yeah, those three, they're all just awesome.
And there's going to be more to come with the three of them.
Yeah, but I didn't, you know, obviously when we saw this the first time and they mentioned Thoros's name in the first season, we don't know. I didn't know. Yeah. People that are watching that aren't reading, they didn't know that all of these things would eventually tie together. So now I'm wondering,
George,
every time. right. Well, every time I'm seeing something now, all I'm thinking about is, all right, well, how are they going to tie this in? Because the way they're tying everything in is a lot tighter than I would thought it would be.
Okay. So can I, off of that, can I ask a question? Because there was a scene in this episode between Melisandre and Stannis. And I was asking myself, what is going on here?
Like, making more shadow babies.
Does Stannis she got not dumped. Say,
yeah. Like,
he did.
What about when Stannis says, make me another child? Like, he just actually means make
pop
me
it in the
oven. She's like, no.
Yeah. Well, doesn't she say to him basically that she's going to go slaughter his family? Because she's like, there are others that share your blood. I'm like, what is this shit?
And you know who her family is?
Yes.
It's Gendry. Dun, dun, dun.
Barely.
Well,
barely, though.
Still, though.
I don't think that was meant to be that.
Well, who else would it be?
Well, she can't be referring to the one bastard who escaped. Like, she can't possibly know of Gendry's existence.
I'm just... No, not Gendry specifically. That's just who my mind went to, because I'm like, holy crap, what's going to happen? But I mean, Robert's bastards, they must be Stannis' family.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
Yeah, but Baratheon's children were, or his bastards anyway, were all killed, except for Gendry.
There are some around.
Phil, what do you think?
I think that you guys should keep watching.
But wait, you haven't watched beyond this point.
But I know things.
Oh, he knows things. Wait, but doesn't Stannis also have a wife and daughter?
He does.
He does, and they've been cast.
Yeah, I don't know when we're going to see them, but...
Well, no, those are his blood. At least his daughter is.
That's true.
Well,
that's
not his wife.
But
that's
you would assume
point.
That she would be on Dragonstone with him and not somewhere where Melisandre has to leave and go...
That's exactly my point.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Okay, so obviously what's coming out of all of this is that Melisandre is chasing down some people. She's sick of Stannis. They're breaking up. It's over.
I don't think they're breaking up. They're just on a break.
His fires, yeah.
So on Facebook, it says it's complicated, is what you would say, right?
Yeah.
If they were
his
to put it in modern day terms.
Yes, his fire's burning low.
That was so mean.
That was an interesting thing, though, because the whole point is that he's supposedly the Lord of Light and the whole fire thing. And if she's saying, your fires burn too low, that's interesting in terms of how much she really believes that he is the true whatever it was.
He needs some Viagra.
Basically.
Here's the thing, all right? Just what happened to Stannis. He got a great looking lady in his life, and then he got boring, and then she walked out, all right? So let's just be a lesson. Just stay interesting, all right? Don't be like Stannis.
He started moping, and then that was just...
Yeah, he got all mopey and it was over.
That's not attractive.
Mm-hmm. Once you have a shadow baby, like, and it runs off and kills people, that's just, what are you going to do?
Where do you go from there in a relationship?
You can't stay together for
the
kids.
Really go further.
Stay together for the kid. With the kid is, they grew up so fast.
The first kill.
Oh, God.
He's gone back home to ass high. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
Don't you ever say that again.
Well, Theon almost got his ass high in this episode.
Wow. You know, I'd much rather be talking right now about ass to poor.
We were talking about Theon sticking his ass in the air, and I think that's kind of the best transition you could possibly make to a whorehouse. Take it away.
I'm still taking notes from Podrick.
I was so confused by this whole scene. Like, this was the part of the episode that didn't work for me, and maybe I just, I didn't have the visual sort of... drawing that many other people did. Yes. But I thought it was a strange okay, I'm gonna get really technical here before you guys get into your whatever. I thought analysis. The pacing of it was very your in-depth analysis. The pacing of it felt really off to me. Like it felt like the punchline. I kept waiting for it and it never came. And I didn't really understand.
Yeah,
the whole
I completely
thing.
Agree.
Pod came back with money and then they were all like, tell us, and then it cut away and I was like, tell you what. happened? I don't understand.
I didn't understand what had happened. And I'm not... I get stuff, okay? All right? I know you get stuff. I get stuff too. What I mean to say is like, I completely get it now. But when I was watching it, I didn't get it until after it was done. And I was like, wait, that's what they were trying to say? Because I didn't know if it had something to do with maybe he's a eunuch and they couldn't do anything.
Or like maybe he turned them down. Like maybe he was too proud or gay or like something. You know, like my I was trying to work it out and I couldn't. And then it cut away and it was like, okay, so that was supposed to be funny? Okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, in hindsight, it is funny because it's Pod. So it's like, go Pod. Good for you, buddy. You know, but still, yeah.
I was like, why wouldn't the horse not take his money? That's just bad business.
That's what they were saying.
But it's just very highly suspicious. And that's why they were, at the end of it, Tyrion and Bronn are comparing notes with Pod. They're like, what did you do? You know, we want details. He pours him wine. Like,
what didn't I do?
It's really, really suspicious.
It's not meant to be suspicious. It was meant to be funny.
Yeah
I think so too.
Like there's not anything like detective wise afoot. Like we got to get to the bottom of what happened.
Right.
Yeah, he's not a secret Lannister. You know, he didn't like beat them or make them beat each other. Really, I mean, what the show was trying to say was he did a great job for his first time, and he stepped back, and they were like, you know what? We're just not even going to make you pay for our work.
I know. What kind of whores are they?
Yeah, like, first off, it's like, well, it's what happening is Baelish is he's not giving them the attention they deserve, and they're slacking on their whore duties. You know?
I think that's true.
That's a lot of coin he could have missed out on. He gets probably 20-30% commission off that, you know?
I know.
He doesn't like bad investments. He'd be pissed if he knew. I'm sure he's not going to be happy about that one.
Exactly.
Well, it was a good scene.
For other reasons, right?
Good for Pod.
Yeah.
Did a lot of stuff for Tyrion. We like Tyrion. And you know what? Good for Pod. All right? They were just doing their job. You were just doing yours. There you go.
It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Well, how many more puns can we think of before we're done recording? Anybody else have a pun? Winterfell, what about you?
I'm tapped out.
So from whorehouses to a land where there are no interest in whores.
Yeah.
Right?
Or would be and mostly no genitalia.
I'm still waiting to find out where we're going.
We're going to Astapor.
Oh, okay. Astapor, the land of men who die. I got
eunuch
nothing.
Soldiers. Yeah, eunuch soldiers, as I believe it.
Thank you. The land of eunuch soldiers. Yeah. Land of soldiers.
Yes.
The land of Varys's dreams.
The land of Varys's dreams. An army of spiders, if you will.
Pretty much, yeah. Would it be funny if they did like, you know, like an Attack of the Clone style shot where it was just like Varys?
Yeah, but they couldn't fight anywhere with rough terrain because the shoes don't have the right soles for it.
true. Maybe that's why it's called the Walk of Pain.
Maybe.
Maybe. Danny's walking down the bridge. Okay, guys. And Selena, did you ever think of the Phantom reference you were thinking of?
No.
Wait, what was it?
Basically, you know, like how when Danny comes in and she's like, I'll take them all, even the ones that are not, that haven't done their training. I was just thinking there's some, that is a reference to something else. Like there's someone else in history or literature or something who does that. And I just couldn't remember who it was.
I wouldn't be surprised though, because that is from the books and George always likes to pick up things from history and add it to the book.
It's like, I'll save them all, you know? Like I won't
I'm kind of thinking of Star Wars when Obi-Wan's grabbing those clone soldiers.
No, that's not it.
Is you're thinking of Sorcerer's Stone when he bought all the candy in the trolley. We'll take the lock.
We'll take the lock.
No, but let's just say that's it because it's brilliant.
Anyway, so Danny's walking down the bridge, okay? There are obviously she's in somebody else's city, all right? Kind of like when she was a brand new Dothrak. You know, it's a new situation for her. She's got Barristan. You know, her entourage is growing and she sees someone suffering and she picks one person out of like the 100 that are there and singles them out and wants to help them. We've seen this before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what got Drogo killed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there going to be a negative repercussion from her trying to help the guy get a drink, or was that just a story tool? Because I feel like I just need to know.
I don't think that was, I think that was just, it's just showing that she's compassionate and showing, and it's going to give her enemies the tool of saying, oh, but she is a woman, she is weak, you know?
Well, I guess I forgot that she was compassionate, so they needed to remind us again with 3 minutes of the episode.
Well, she did lock Doria and Zarozo. Duck sauce in the vault at the end of last season. So.
There you go.
Well done,
yes.
She's got a mean streak to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
It is true. I think it ties, though, to not that moment with when she's standing in whatever you want to call that room and she's looking around at all the slaves that are looking down on her from up on the ramparts or the battlements, whatever you want to call those. It's just, I don't necessarily think it shows that she's soft. It shows she's compassionate. She cares about people.
Yeah.
And
she cares. You know,
obviously, there's more going on in her head there than just what meets the eye.
She always has a soft spot for the, you know, the downtrodden, and you know, the, you know, in this case, like the slaves, or in the case of you know, the Lazarene, when she saved Miri Mazdur from being raped and killed. But she always, there's always like an ongoing struggle there where she's, you know, cruel when she needs to be or against her enemies. But, you know, for the downtrodden and the weak, she's always very compassionate. And there's kind of a...
So her and Jamie are going to be buds.
Pretty much. So. Exactly. Yeah.
One day.
There's a new ship.
I don't think I've heard that one before. Not to get too deep, but do you think that this episode title could have been tied back to Jamie and Brienne as opposed to the Walk of Punishment? Because I don't really feel like they featured that very much in the episode.
I thought it was going to be that or something else that we can't talk about.
Well, I think that case can be made because during their, well, they're not really walking. They're on the horse together, tied together. We're talking Brienne and Jamie here. He basically tells her, hey, when we get to the camp, you're going to be raped. And so he gives her kind of a heads up, and the rest of that journey, I'm sure, is pretty painful for her.
Yeah, because I know an episode later in the season is called The Bear and the Maiden Fair, but I feel like that could have been the title of this episode.
I agree. They showed that song a lot. I mean, the guys were singing it, and it's obviously during the credits.
Obviously, we're lacking the bear. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't see any bear, so.
The song was utilized a lot in the...
God, these guys, it's just like, it's getting a little tiny bit too pitch perfect for me at this point with all this like singing.
It's like auto-tuned guys.
Yeah, or like, you know, it's like the reading The Lord of the Rings or a Game of Thrones, I suppose, novel when that huge block of song just comes and you're like, all right, well, let's get on with it. That's how I read it anyway.
It every time.
I do, though, I do, every time.
Yep. I read the songs. I feel like it wasted a lot of time, but hell, why not?
Right.
I'm here.
But let's get back to Dany because, I mean, obviously she comes in front of the slave master and we have Missandei next to him. Sort of, I love the way that she sort of pauses every time he gives her an insult. And then it's like...
She's so smart, though, to be able to do that on a whim.
Yes. She's really well built up as a character, I think.
She's probably used to it. I don't know. I was glad that guy was still the same way he was before when he's insulting Danny in front of her. But I can't help but think he's just going to get his face melted off with that dragon she gives him.
You know what? I just want to say, because when she said that thing with the dragon, I'm going to give you one of my dragons. I remember reading that part in the book. And I got so mad. I was mad at George. I was mad at Danny. I was like, she cannot do this. No. And it was like, oh, I haven't been as mad about anything else in the entire series that I've read so far as when she was giving up one of her dragons.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. Can we do a poll? Is it a trick? I mean, does she, because like, here's what I see happening.
Why don't you poll you and Zach?
Well, no, I mean, what do you guys think? Like, if you can separate yourself from the fact that you know and like are just watching the series, do you think she's the kind of person?
Basically.
Mm. Yeah. Like when she's leaving on the boat with the 8,000 Unsullied and the boys and all that, does she just like snap her fingers and the dragon like melts his face off and leaves and burns the city down on his way back to her?
Spoilers.
When I read it, that's the thing is that I didn't think that she would be able to leave a dragon behind. And then I read it and I was like, oh, she's going to leave it behind. George has totally misunderstood his own character. I'm so angry.
Well, she's pretty serious. She's pretty serious about Selmy and Jorah like questioning her in public in front of the other guys, and she reprimands them later. Obviously, not a very powerful threat. Oh yeah, you'll just be advising somebody else. But still, it's like, oh okay. But yeah, she was upset about it. So I don't really know what's going on. Maybe she really does intend to leave the dragon with this asshole
to get her army. You know, it's a huge army. She wouldn't have been able to get somewhere else. So I think there's definitely something, you know, there.
Dany is very smart. She's very cunning, and I think that she's doing a lot of things here that'll help put her plan into motion, whatever that plan might be. You see how she looks at the way the slaves are being treated. You see how she reacts to the way the Unsullied themselves are treated.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that she doesn't really like this dude. And I think she understands more, at least from not necessarily what's being said, but I think she understands sort of his approach and his delivery. And I think that she made a very tactical move in taking Missandei away from him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a nice touch.
I don't know. It's like she has this mean streak where she'll snap at Selmy and be like, Rhaegar wasn't the last dragon. And then on the other hand, she sees this guy a little parched because he's been sitting in the sun with his wounds, and she goes and gives him a kiss.
All right, let's be clear here. First off, the guy was like basically on a crucifix. All right. He was being killed. Yeah, so it was a little parched. No.
She was about Theon. Was he a little injured?
Yeah, no. Theon was. He was suffering horrors, guys. All right. Horrors. While this
it wasn't like
was
just getting your
parched.
Hand chopped off or like, you know, hanging there, sunburns.
I'm saying she has this sympathy that I think is a little unwarranted.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, but that's part of her. Part of her character is being, she is a leader. She is the dragon, and the people that are serving with her, she's snapping at them because they're not doing what they should be doing. You know, they should not be questioning someone that they call your grace in front of the person that they're making deals with. That's their fault. And her reprimanding them was tiny compared to what another king would have done, like perhaps the rest of her family.
And she's also got this thing where she has these two seasoned men, older than her, more experienced, more knowledgeable. They both lived in Westeros. She has never been there since she was... No, she has never been there. And she's a woman. She's young. If she doesn't... I mean, they will serve her and they will follow her. But if she doesn't sort of... She needs to remind them every once in a while, especially Barristan, because he's just joined her, that they are not joining her to decide what she should do. Like, she's not like, say, Joffrey, who is technically not the ruling king, even though he kind of acts like he is, because he's a child. Like, she is Khaleesi and the true dragon and all of those things. So I think it makes sense.
I don't care that she's the Khaleesi. I think eventually, hopefully that'll get phased out of the show.
Khaleesi. But what will Jorah say?
Queen with giant dragon queen. Things.
You know what I mean?
With giants and dragon things.
Yeah. Like she has her spot. All right. She has her spot. She has Barristan. He's talking back, like he said, because he's back here for a little bit. But as far as everything that's happening, I mean, the transition that was going down inside of this dude's personal amphitheater, which I thought was great, which clearly means that he can get rid of these without selling them because he's not hard up for the cash, which kind of made me worried because her minus a dragon is less cool. Three dragons is definitely cooler than two. I think we can agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. But I think it's pretty clear that Daenerys is going to do whatever it takes to get her fucking dragon back. All right. Like,
Where are my dragons?
I can't say that I know for sure because I don't know for sure. I don't know if anyone knows. I don't know if it's in a book. We're going to know next week that she betrayed him. I don't know.
And they might change it from the book. Who knows?
What do you guys think, though, that are listening? The ones that haven't read ahead.
Yeah. Let us know
Let
us know if Dany will renege on her agreement.
I mean, she better. It's a dragon.
Not just any dragon, but the big one.
But you know what you can have lots of on screen?
Uh-oh.
Horse heads.
Oh, no.
Yeah, horse heads. Yeah, well, it's the Godfather
Psychedelic
Part 5 today on Game of Thrones. Yeah, it looks like a spiral galaxy. I was like, what is this? Are they from space? Yeah. Evil white snow people from space.
It's like a crop circle, but not.
I hope they explain what's going on here. Is there some like meaning to that? I'm not really sure about that.
But they said that the White Walkers were artistic. And I was like, but... They're like zombies.
Yeah, it's
things.
A regular
like,
Van Gogh.
What are they doing? Like, la la la, we're in the snow. We're going to do this nice little round thing. Like, what is happening?
You know what it is? Like, when you live north of the wall, as Mance Rayder and those guys do, I'm sure you see that stuff all the time.
Oh.
So you're like, oh, okay, Starry Night. I get it. You know, and they just walk over and it's like, oh, okay.
Maybe they're just like waiting for winter and they're like, what should we do? It still hasn't come. Oh, let's do this round head thing.
It's smart in a way because they killed the horses. So now they all have to travel on foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if they're at the horses, they're also at the men. It's not like the men abandoned the horses or were very far from them.
They did kill a lot of the men, though, but they said that those have basically been turned into White Walkers, didn't they? Which is pretty scary.
Yeah.
If they start popping up again, like ragged black cloaks.
But only a few of the men, actually, well, including Old Bear, which I was happy to see. I was happy to see he was still alive, show up at Craster's now. They knock on his door.
That's before Mance Rayder divvies out the war orders, if you will.
He's Tormund. Like, yo, you guys just go climb this wall.
Climb the wall.
Yeah, he says it so casually. It's like, hey, go climb the wall.
It's only guarding one side.
It's only 700 feet tall. No big deal.
There are crazier things in the world. They have giants. They have an army of 10,000 people. I mean, it's strange to think what's happening with these people when you really think about it. They just walked upon a circle of dead horse heads, and they're like, well, everyone you've known for a while is probably dead. Here's their horses. First things first, we're going to save the horse meat. That'd be good to feed people. We just won't tell them where we got it. And I'm going to need you guys to go fight. And the first thing that wasn't said was, hey, life is so weird that this stuff is happening to us. Instead, a guy walks up with a perfectly trimmed beard, and he's like, hey, do we finally get to fight? So that's Westeros for you. He's so excited. He's like, let's climb this wall. We'll hug each other. It'll be wonderful. And first off, go kill everyone you've ever met. And then Mance Rayder's rude to John again. He's like, hey, if he doesn't do his job, just push him off the wall.
You know who I want to push off the wall, though?
Let me think.
Tell us.
Theon.
Ned Stark.
Ned? No, you want to push
John
Arya
Snow.
Off the wall.
Arya.
This wasn't meant to be a big mystery. This was meant to be a transition. I want to push off anybody who makes another fat joke about Sam to his face.
I agree with you. I am so sick of the fat jokes. Like,
well, because
I think it's
they're
too
all
much.
So surprised that he is still that big after living in such hard circumstances.
It's like Hurley on Lost. Get over it.
Well, same with Hurley. It was like, dude, it's like, come on, man. We're on a desert island. There are literally two skeletons in our water cave, and you're still the same.
You know what? Whatever. Okay. I feel like they're, it annoys me. It's like lowest common denominator humor. And we talked about this last week, so I won't do it again, but.
No, I agree. It's like the South Park routine. It's easy
to
do.
It's like the redhead or like the glass. We still do it today. It's not even like a time thing. It's like, you have glasses or you have braces or you have red hair or you're fat. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, grow up.
Are glasses and braces still funny in Sweden?
Yeah. Have you guys outgrown that now?
Oh, dude, I don't think people get
made
glasses, fun of that
now
anymore.
They're like,
we're so
hipster glasses, you know. that's like cool. You know, people
every
will get...
pair of glasses is hipster glasses.
Oh, really? Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think kids still make fun of them. Anyway, that's not important.
But yeah, Craster. And surprise, surprise, they go to Craster's, right? And somebody's pregnant. Somebody's given birth.
That's Gilly, right?
It's Gilly, yeah.
Was it Gilly, though? Because he's looking in on her, yes. But she didn't really seem to have that recognition. Well, okay, but she didn't have that recognition in her eyes, clearly, because she's focusing on other things.
She had recognition and birth in her eyes. She was like, there's something coming out of me, and this is not comfortable.
Yeah.
No, it didn't look comfortable, but... You know, unfortunately, there's this moment. It's very hushed. Everybody knows, well, it's a boy. You know what they do with boys.
Mm-hmm. What do they do with boys?
They take them into the woods and leave them for the White Walkers.
No.
No!
Yeah, that's sad.
I had a feeling that Sam might want to take this one away and raise it as his own.
Oh, God.
You know? Could you imagine? That's like a new sitcom, like Sam
maybe
and
he'll try.
Baby.
Sam and Gilly.
Craster's Keep, that entire first scene... At Craster's Keep, when they came up to the gates, I'm thinking to myself, Craster, you sad, sad son of a bitch. You're standing there, and you're seriously trying to pull the hard-ass maneuver when you've got an entire just band of assholes in front of you with their swords and shields that haven't slept with women in months. Like, seriously, you've got a house full of women, and not to mention a house with food and warmth and shelter, and they've just got done trudging through the wilderness of the Great North. And you're seriously going to sit there and be like, oh, I might let you in. It's like, they're going to kill you if they don't let them in.
They flashed their pieces, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
This was one time that they did not want to get fucked with.
Well, I'm not sure what happened. All I know is that Gilly gave birth. It was a nice tie back to the last section that we had inside of Craster's Keep. And I'm not sure what's going to happen with Sam. They didn't really show the end of it, but maybe we'll ask him next time he comes on.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. He'd probably be around on Friday's episode.
Well,
so I think that about wraps up the episode discussion. Obviously, a lot of own-worthy moments to choose from, but what did you guys pick as your top owns of the episode?
Ooh, well, I have a really obvious one, so I'll go first. There were a lot of really sort of great moments in this episode, and the chair scraping one was a close second for me, but I gotta, come on, girls.
Podrick.
No, screw that. No. I gotta give it to the quote that was wrote. I feel like, you know, they Game of Thrones, they've listened to Game of Thrones at this point. They know us. They feel like they need to, you know, throw us a few owns rather than bones. And they wrote this one for me, I feel personally. So thanks, guys.
This is the one I texted you about. Yeah. Go on.
It is, of course, Miss Danny who goes, all men must die. But we are not men. And I just think, Eowyn, and I am no man. And it was all Lord of the Rings and greatness and go them.
Yes, go women. They're better than men. All right,
yes.
Next up.
Although Tyrion's scraping chair was also awesome.
Well, I'll tell you, definitely got owned, Jaime.
Yes.
Sorry about obvious.
Yeah.
Winterfell with the OG reference. Okay, so his hand got chopped off.
Yeah, his sword hand too, which is going to cause some problems.
Here you go, Selena. I'll give you. I'll throw a bone your way here. I'll give it to Brienne.
Awesome.
When she was talking to Jaime when they were tied back to back, and he's going on and on about himself, and she says, "Maybe people just love to overpraise a famous name."
Yeah. Great. Awesome.
And also a shout out to Craster.
For still owning all
look
his
at
wives.
Him. He's a walking feast.
That like, crazy laugh he had during the chair. I don't know why I wrote that
down.
He
had like emphysema or something.
I don't, he's just like, ah, he just had he had a really good time about
it's like
that.
He should be on one of those cigarette commercials. Not that we should be making fun of them. But.
All right, sweet cheeks, come over here. We're going to talk.
I think he was making pig noises at one point just to mock Sam some more.
It's hard to pick an Owen in this episode. We've got piggy noises at Sam. We've got Littlefinger getting a brand new wife, big winner there. Just a nice package for him. I'm going to have to give my own to Mr. And Guy, who's one of the Brothers Without Banners, and he's shoving someone inside of a cart, and he hits his face on the side of the cart, which I'm sure hurt no matter what. And he says, apologies, but you're one ugly fucker, and I'd rather not see you no more. So there you go. Double negatives, all from our good friend, yours truly. Wow. So that's my own.
My own goes to how smoothly Baelish takes his new appointment as
going to the Vale, and he's going to be Lord of the Eyrie. He says titles do seem to breed titles.
Yes. So
I thought that was pretty badass.
Awesome. Also, I'll just have to one more time reiterate. First off, Hot Pie, great bread. Seriously, good job.
He might have exited the show now. That bread might be the last we see of him. So let's just take a moment.
Don't eat it.
No more Hot Pies for us. Sad times.
No more Hot Pies.
I'll miss them.
All of my bread is going to be direwolf shaped from now on.
Unfortunately, we're drawing quite close to the end of the episode, and that means that we're not going to have all the time in the world to read off every single tweet, Facebook post, text message, email, yada, 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 you guys have sent our way. Raven, exactly. You guys sent in a raven, and they've enjoyed that
messages
from last Friday.
And bottles, you know, we get it all.
No sound effects this episode, but I'm going to go ahead and toss it Eric's way because he's about to lay down some of those that we can fit in, and the rest will happen later.
Speaking of laying things down, the bed with our first own says it has to go to Podrick for fucking whores so well they didn't take his money.
What?
Hashtag beast.
Hashtag beast.
Where the hell was that one?
Well, you could always visit winterscoming.net.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, we have lots of things that you can read that you may find entertaining or enlightening.
Winter is coming. It's one of those places you go on the internet when you're thinking to yourself,
where should I go on the internet today?
Do I enjoy books? Do I enjoy television? Well, good. I fit all of these categories. I should head on over to winterscoming.net because guess what? And I have to toss a special shout out to Mr. Axe Chucker because the Twitter recaps are probably better than the episode recaps. And I don't mean in quality.
Awesome.
No, it's good. The tweets have been exciting. We've got a lot of good stuff rolling in. A lot of exciting stuff on Facebook as well. We're going to try to get to these as much as we can over the next part of the week.
And of course, if you like our show as much as we hope you do, you can head on over to iTunes, which is the place that you most likely downloaded this episode, and give us a little rate and review, just like Liana Baby Mama, who says,
"Ooh, wow,
your podcast is my new layout on the beach necessity. Love it.
Oh.
Hashtag spring break. Hashtag Hodor." And Zach referenced this earlier in the show, but we also got a review courtesy of Michelle510, who says, "I listen to a lot of podcasts on Game of Thrones, and this one is one of my favorites. I have a tiny platonic crush on Selena. I could listen to her talk all day. This podcast has great input on episodes. I like hearing their views. I like the book chapter reviews they did. The group season one commentary rewatch is a fun thing that no other Game of Thrones podcast does. Keep up the great work." So,
well,
thank you,
I mean,
Michelle.
It's wonderful.
Lots of love.
You're nice. You're nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you know, as we've mentioned in the past, it's a great place for other people to get honest and unsolicited feedback from other listeners. So we appreciate your rating and reviewing of the show. It's very helpful to us. It's helpful to our potential listeners. So thank you. It means a lot to Phil too. He may not always say it, but
you know, he feels
him
it.
And him and Marco. Marco cries if he sees anything less than 5 stars on iTunes. So you don't want to make Marco cry.
Yes.
And finally, don't forget to visit hypeable.com, where there's stuff that isn't about Game of Thrones. What? What? There's no
what are you
such
talking
thing.
About?
I know. There's no.
Are there
there's
other
no
shows
world.
On TV?
I know. I don't really remember, but you know, once those 10 weeks are over, maybe you know you want to fill your time with something.
My TV only turns on at 9 o'clock
on Sundays.
Sundays.
Ten weeks a year.
Well, that's good. You know, convert power.
It does.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Selena, you're also not telling these people that if they'd like to hear your voice on 17 different other programs, they can do that easily at hypeable.com.
Michelle might be interested
in
this.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Michelle, if you're a big fan of Selena, okay, even platonically, you can listen to other shows on there. Okay. I think right now she's doing a rewatch of Firefly on another podcast called Rewatchable. Mm-hmm. Selena, I'll have my money now. Thank you.
Which is probably,
there you go.
It's probably recording in 15 minutes, so you're never going to sleep.
Exactly. Yes.
Terrible.
You just keep going from one podcast to the next.
Pretty much, yeah. This is like my version of rest. You know, I'm actually sleep podcasting. It's a skill I've picked up over the years.
<That's good. laughs>
If you guys are still here with us, you've ridden with us long enough in this episode to know that it's really late. It's like 6 a.m. where Celine exists right now. Winter fills up late. There's a whole lot of shit happening. It's busy times. We're in episode 3. Episode 4 is coming out soon. We've got 2 episodes this week. I need to take a breath. My name is Zach Wood.
I'm Bron Stark.
I'm Asha the Wildling.
I'm Eric Skull.
Hands up, people.
You guys.
Wave goodbye to Hot Pie.
Hey, if we have Jamie on the show, he's not going to be able to clap to start it.